It's December 21st, 2016. Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney. I am the editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Today on the show, I'm talking with Sean Kitchen once again about PA's right-wing governor-in-waiting, State Senator Scott Wagner, books for the battle ahead, and we will continue our call for building a progressive media network right here in Pennsylvania. As a reminder, you can keep progressive activist media going strong by becoming a member for as little as $2 a month. Our 2016 membership drive is all about preparing for the next four to five to six to 10 years ahead of pull no punches progressive media in PA, something that's even more important today than ever with the election of Donald Trump and the continued rightward surge in our politics. All you got to do is go to ragingchickenpress.org and click on the support and membership tab. Under there, you can become a member. Click become a member. It'll take you right to our membership page, and you can become a member for as little $2 a month. Or if you're not quite ready to become a member and you just want to give us a donation, you know, kind of end of the year giving kind of fun, you can click on the support and membership tab and click donate under the same tab, and you can make a one-time donation to Raging Chicken Press as a way to kind of close out the 2016 year. If you're listening on Podbean, that's kind of where we host our podcast. You're listening on Podbean, just click the big green button at the top that says become a patron and you'll be on your way. So as also a reminder, we mentioned this as in our big coming back podcast last week, that we're looking to bring aboard some new writers, some social media organizers and contributors as a way of continuing to build our network for the fights ahead. As you've noticed, we've welcomed several new contributors to Raging Chicken. We've begun paying our contributors, and we want to kind of increase what we're able to pay our contributors as a way of kind of building a sustainable progressive media network here in PA. All the more reason to become a member today. But if you're interested in, you know, contributing to Raging Chicken Press and writing for Raging Chicken Press, maybe working on our podcast in any way, shape, or form, want to do an internship, you let us know. All you got to do is just email me, Kevin Mahoney, at editor@ragingchickenpress.org. Let me know what you're interested in. Let me know how you'd like to contribute. We'll get on our way. That's the best thing we could do. So without further ado, Sean, welcome from Harrisburg, man.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going. I've been sick for the past few days, so I'm not feeling 100%. But I'm going to chalk that up to having to digest a whole load of crap that we're seeing in our national and statewide politics right now.
Yeah, I guess that's a good reason for feeling sick, for being sick.
Yeah, I have to say, it's been a weird kind of week. You know, it was the end of my semester this past week, so I had to finish up a whole lot of grading and that kind of stuff at my day job. And it's given me a chance to kind of reflect, you know. It's like, you know, look, we're just a few or less than a month away, right? I mean, less than a month away from inaugurating this kind of this right wing proto-fascist, right, as a statewide president. And I mean, for our national president. And then, I don't see very many good things here happening at the statewide level as well.
No, I mean, we're a month away from, Donald Trump becoming president. Our last little line of hope didn't come through, fell short, with the Electoral College meeting up last Friday. And then, work begins in less than a month away, less than a month from now.
Yeah, I have to say, you know, that was the first ever live stream of an Electoral College meeting I ever watched. But I actually watched live the Pennsylvania Electoral College meeting. And first of all, I have to say is, like, you know, if anybody had any real hope at all that they were going to see the kind of defections, the faithless electors or the Hamilton electors or whatever, I think that was really nothing more than wishful thinking. I didn't expect anything to come of this in terms of shifting the results of the election. I did find it interesting that there were more electors who defected from Hillary Clinton than there were Donald Trump. But that, you know, it's kind of interesting nonetheless. As we move forward, one of the things that was so interesting to me about watching the Pennsylvania electoral process is that seeing Governor Tom Wolf kind of give his introductory speech, and he kind of did the same kind of thing that we see from Obama. You know, it's this I don't know, protect the institutions, look like I'm a very important, talk about the sacred duty of the Electoral College, as if the thing is, this is just a kind of another normal transition of power.
It's like that everything is fine meme with the dog sitting there in the room, like from Cartoon Network, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, well, the whole room's on fire.
Yeah, the whole room's on fire. It's like everything's fine with the cup of coffee in your hand.
Yeah, telling you.
That's how I feel where we're at right now. Everything is fine. Everything is not fine.
No, it's like, not. And it's really, I have to say, it's kind of disorienting.
And what we're hung up
disorienting, like knowing kind of what's going on and then actually kind of watching this stuff, like these people behaving like it's normal.
And what we're hung up on is talking about his stupid fucking Twitter account instead of covering the actual news here with who his cabinet picks are, what's going on. No, we're talking about some fucking 3 a.m. Twitter conversation and everyone's like, yeah, everything's fine. No, this is like, who cares? Who gives a shit about his Twitter account? You know, like we should be talking about, I don't know, the environment.
Well, I look at it like this. I actually think the Twitter stuff is that's kind of more distractive media reporting than anything else. What I find more disturbing is actually the media coverage is actually that the ones who are covering his picks, but they're covering it as they would cover any other presidential pick.
Exactly. Okay. So 2 weeks ago when this happened, the New York, the Washington Post published an article. And when I was home for Thanksgiving, I saw it was picked up in the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Daily News, and basically like promoting Trump's gender diversity within his cabinet. You know, Trump is picking all these women to fill these seats. You know, we should be saying this is great. You know, he's being diverse. When the people he's putting in here are your plutocrats. You know, these are people who made their millions, or you know, they're related to I don't know. The person who ran Blackwater, you know, and made billions of dollars off of privatizing public schools. But yeah, we'll gloss over that stuff. But thank God he's putting, you know, he's diversifying his cabinet.
Well, that's what I mean. And that's the way that they can cover it without covering it. Right. They can look at the surfaces instead of the depths. And, you know, it's remarkable, you know, which all the more reason why, you know, we've got our work cut out for us right here at Raging Chicken. And frankly, any other progressive media outlet across the country, to actually do due diligence and kind of get into the backgrounds of these people and not only just kind of report on what they have actually done and how they've done it, but bring this together into a broader narrative of actually what's going on. Because, you know, one of the things that, you know, some of the media outlets have been very good about digging into some of the backgrounds of these people, but they still want to attribute it to this kind of like, look what Donald Trump is doing. When if you look at those people that are appointed and the platforms that they bring with them, right, the agendas that they bring with them, those agendas are virtually indistinguishable from what has happened to the Republican Party over the past 40 years. And, it's basically all those people that are in there are bringing forth, you know, the Koch brothers agenda into the White House.
And you know who did it best, who said it best over the past month?
Do tell.
Saturday Night Live with their cold open from last week, you know, with John Goodman coming in as Rex Tillerson, you have shirtless Putin and Trump is like totally oblivious. You know, Alec Baldwin's totally oblivious to what's going on over here. And, you know, like John Goodman is laying out his oil exploration plans for Russia, you know, playing Rex Tillerson with Putin and stuff like that. And how he's going to be enriching himself off of becoming Secretary of State. Like, I think that was that right there was probably the most important piece of reporting that happened. And it came from a bunch of satirists on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, it was good. My only criticism of that piece, right, was that, you know, I think the portraying Trump as the kind of doofus who doesn't kind of know what's going on, I think that was not accurate. I mean, I think that, you know, he's not interested in all the details and background. I would totally agree with that. But I don't think he's clueless to what's going on. I think he's integral to what's going on.
Yeah, no, I would agree on that. But I feel like the connections that his cabinet picks have with the money interests that they're aligned with, that right there played the best, like did some of the best actual serious reporting on it, because anything like that has come out in the media since his picks have been revealed.
Absolutely. Well, so, you know, one of the things that, you know, in this context, you know, I've been doing a whole lot of thinking about, how Raging Chicken can be most useful in moving us forward, what we can do on this podcast, what are the kinds of things that we're going to need to pay attention to. And I've already mentioned that, you know, part of our agenda right now is bringing on more writers to cover a broad spectrum of issues, and that are going to be, you know, showcasing progressive voices and activist voices and narrative, but also kind of putting together the bigger story about what's actually going on. So one of the things, you know, you and I have talked to, quite a bit about, so we have some other folks, other contributors too as well, but you and I in particular, about really needing to dig deep into Pennsylvania politics in a way that is, you know, not going to allow the kind of, you know, craziness that's been going on in this state to continue. As just some sort of aberration or something, you know, oh, that's just Harrisburg or these are these crazies. But to say, you know, look, this does pose a threat. You know, this poses a serious threat. And one of those threats, in my mind, one of the most serious threats has been the rise of State Senator Scott Wagner to a position of power within the PA GOP. For all intents and purposes, he's the, you know, pre-inaugurated or at least, you know, wishful thinking pre-inaugurated right-wing governor wannabe, you know, that looks like he's going to be challenging Governor Wolf in the next round of elections. And so, you know, you've done a couple pieces on Wagner now. And so I'm curious, a couple things, Sean. It's like, first, you know, walk us through at least, you know, what you've been reporting on, but also how you're thinking about Scott Wagner, right? And why you think it's going to be important to be focusing on Scott Wagner over the next few years.
I think Scott Wagner must be covered on two fronts. One locally with what he does on his state actions, and then also building up a national profile of Scott Wagner to warn people around the country of what we have in our state. You know, like after watching the Trump election happen and after really watching the power Wagner has gained over the past 3 years in office, 2 years in office now, he is probably the most dangerous person within Pennsylvania politics. And he is probably going to be the next, he's trying to position himself as the next big conservative Trump-like governor coming from the Rust Belt. These Rust Belt states that have gone by the wayside. You know, he's going to be the next Scott Walker. He's going to be the next Mike Pence, Bruce Rauner. You name the governor, that's where he's going to be. And he already is positioning himself with a he already has a position of a radically conservative General Assembly behind him doing whatever he wants or whatever they want to do. Mm-hmm. You know, under Governor Corbett, there was really no leadership coming from the governor's office. He was an effective leader. You know, like the all three legislative chambers were factioning against each other. But also Corbett was viewed as the person who sent their friends to jail, gained the respect. Wagner, on the other hand, is someone who pretty much has given the Senate Republicans a super majority, veto-proof supermajority, like majority in the Senate.
So let me ask you, so you say he has given them. Can you walk folks through a little bit how he has given them that?
So, you know, he started out as a rich conservative activist, made his millions off of trucking municipal waste contracts. And he won a special election through a white write-in campaign with 47% of the vote in a write-in campaign months before the primary. Mm-hmm. So that's how he became senator. And since then, he's wielded his power, heavily funding other senators and primaries to get them elected to the office. And he has pretty much built a cadre of like seven or eight fundamentally conservative senators to get elected in the state, you know, get elected over the past couple of years. So he's building his caucus within the Republican caucus.
Exactly. And he's doing it with money, too. It's not just with, you know, his political persuasiveness, but he's actually putting his own personal money and his campaign money, directed it towards races where, you know, he feels that the candidates, the Republican candidates, aren't conservative enough. Right. And then handpicks their challengers and, you know, uses his deep pockets in order to kind of gain more loyalty within this caucus.
Yeah. And so he's been buying those seats and he's been buying his own caucus from the Republican caucus. Even within, so he'll be able to have his people do what it needs to get done if he gets elected governor. Another thing is he's also fairly moderate or fairly liberal as a Republican on your social issues. So he's not getting hung up, and he's a political tactician in the point where he's not getting hung up on your social war, your social, the social issues or the that we've seen from Republicans over the past 20 or 30 years. No, he's going straight after the worker. He's taking the business interests straight in front, and he's taking a Koch-led agenda to the forefront. And that's the type of governor he's going to become. He might be liberal on some of the social class or some of your social issues, but he's going to take it to the workers, take it to the unemployed. And just, first thing is probably make Pennsylvania a right-to-work state.
Yeah, I mean,
first item on our agenda if Wagner ever becomes governor.
Yeah, I think that, that's kind of, he really is. And just, we were talking about this before the show, he's very much a Trump mini-me, in some ways. I think that he's a better, politician, a better messenger, and better organizer than Trump could ever hope to be. But, if you say, for example, if you take three of the key issues that came out of the Trump campaign, one, anti-worker agenda, check the box for Scott Wagner. Anti-environment, anti-climate change guy, check the box for Wagner. Anti-immigrant guy, check the box for Wagner. Right. I mean, this is, raising minimum wage, check the box for Wagner. So I think that, we see that kind of consistency. And he could potentially be a fairly dangerous politician if he moves forward, not just for people in Pennsylvania, but, frankly, the Republicans are going to be looking for, their next star lineup. And Scott Wagner has shown himself to be a pretty good politician, and he knows how to play the game, and he's got a heck of a lot of money behind him.
He does. And this is the type of thing where he has the ability to catapult his name nationally if he becomes the next governor. I mean, that he is playing for keeps right now, and he is a climber, and you just don't know how high or how far he wants to go nationally. And this is the type of thing where, not a lot of people know about him nationally or know who he is. And this is the type of story where, over the next couple of months, we can, yes, build that support and doing our local reporting and, building up that profile of him, but also taking it nationally. Because I believe this is what has to be done in order for people to realize what is coming down the pike, what our battle cry is going to be in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I agree.
This Wagner is our battle cry. He's it.
Yeah, no, I agree. So, you had a couple pieces here. And I think just as a way of kind of introducing some of the kind of reporting that you've been doing on that, giving us a sense a little bit about, the way this guy operates, right? Because he's not, it's not just the issues that mark him as kind of similar to what we see right now in this emerging Trump administration, but it's also his temperament, right? Also the way he kind of talks to people and what he thinks.
He's very arrogant, pompous. He doesn't care what he's saying, who he's saying it to, or who he's saying it about. He will call union leaders, compare them to Hitler and Stalin. He will... He doesn't care what he's saying or who he's saying it to. He'll tell, people who are about to lose their job that he has a big set of balls and that they don't have the backbone to meet up with him. Yeah,
Walk through that one, because that was the piece that got quite a bit of traction on Raging Chicken Press this past week. You're talking about Scott Wagner's big balls email.
Yeah. So, Scott Wagner formally introduced his informal campaign for governor a couple months ago, like right after the election. And one of the first emails he sent out to his people was telling them he wants to make Pennsylvania great again, right?
Of course he does.
So the first thing he does is marketing, just going right after that, making Pennsylvania great again. Second thing he does, his first actual political campaign stunt as a governor, or as candidate for governor, is to he forced the Senate to pull the vote on a bill that would have kept three of the state's 8 unemployment centers open, call centers, and also kept basically effectively shutting down 4 of them. There's a 4th one, the Harrisburg office, which is going to get severely understaffed in the wake of this. This bill is pretty much a formal bill that passed the House pretty easily. Only 13 people voted against it. There was an agreement in place between all 4 caucuses to get this bill become law, just because it's a procedural funding vote that comes up every 4 years. There should not be a political item. And Governor or Scott Wagner decided to make this a political issue and he got Senate leadership to pull the vote from this. And now 520 unemployment call center employees lost their jobs. And this is going to be a train wreck for tens of thousands of Pennsylvanians who are going to need to get unemployment in Pennsylvania.
So, and my understanding too, right, is that so not only was he instrumental in getting these people fired, but then he turns around in his next breath and blames Governor Wolf for it.
Yes. And so he blames Governor Wolf. And, you know, back in December, I got this email sitting on it for a little bit, just waiting to see how this story really plays out, like what's going on here. Governor Wagner shoots off an email, gets an email from an extremely irate call center employee who is losing their job, right? This person is losing their job, and said, "You people need to grow a pair of balls, take responsibility, because you're just all a bunch of career politicians who, you know, this is the reason why Trump is becoming president." And Wagner responded saying, "No, actually, this is Governor Wolf's fault. Wolf is making me the fall guy here when he's actually in turn laying off his own people, and no one's really talking about it. And, you know, this is all Wolf's fault. He's holding a gun to my head." And then he said, "Trust me on this." When he goes to the career politician part, he's like, "Trust me on this. I am not a career politician, and I have big balls." Now, like that, okay, statement is, you know, you could say that and whatever. And then the very next sentence, what it really does is his question is, "Do you have the backbone to meet with me and get the full story?" Now he's trying to belittle that employee, you know, pretty much mansplaining why this, like, they're losing their job.
I think it's also kind of like the meet me in the parking lot moment, right?
Yeah. Like, so he said, yeah, pretty much. It's like, you know, you don't have the balls to meet with me. I have big balls, but you don't have the backbone to come meet with me.
Yeah. You know, it's like schoolyard bully kind of move.
Yes. And so then finally, and then yesterday or a couple weeks earlier in this week, he sent $150 to people who lost their jobs, you know, in one of the call centers, because that was the only call center that met with Senator Wagner. It was the Altoona senator area. They were the only place that held a meeting with the senator. The other one was where Scott Wagner was told not to come by State Senator Pat Brown out in Allentown. And the other one is in Lancaster, where the union preempted him and they waited him out, and he just eventually left. And he wasn't able to meet with people. So he gave it to the Altoona folks as a way to pin a wedge against Lancaster and Allentown.
Great.
So this guy is using, yeah. So here's your Christmas gift. Yeah, I'm the person responsible for holding up this bill. You know, he was bragging about that, but then he doesn't want to be blamed. But then he's giving people $150.
Right. Well, this is a really important dynamic for people to get their heads around, right? Because this is what we're seeing at the national level here. And now we're seeing this right now in the state of Pennsylvania. Well, let me finish this, please. Head around what's going on in Pennsylvania, right? Is that let's break through those three moves, right? The move is to, number one, use the legislative process as a way of kind of destroying part of the government, turn around, blame it on the other side, blame it on the Democratic guy, right? And then three, like, give yourself personal, like, you know, attempt at least to build some sort of personal loyalty through direct cash payments, right? Directing, kind of saying, "I feel this is the least I can do. I'm reaching out to you. This sucks that you lost your job. I can't believe the governor's doing this. At least me personally, Scott Wagner, give you $150 a piece." I mean, it's remarkable to see this kind of maneuvering taking place.
Yeah, and it's really remarkable seeing not really seeing the statewide media cover this at all. You know, with this happening, this is Scott Wagner's first political action as a candidate for governor of Pennsylvania, and the media has been silent, pretty much silent on this, especially his antics with the email and then giving people $150 in cash retribution.
Yeah, and you would think in the wake of what's happening nationally, that the statewide media would kind of like wake up a little bit and say, "Hey, we're not going to do this again. We're not going to kind of go down the same path that got us Donald Trump, but we're actually going to have to do our due diligence up front." But they're not doing that.
Yeah. And the people who should be leading that charge, you know, Penn Live or other groups, Philly.com, they're not. And it's sad to see. It's sad to see this happening in central Pennsylvania and seeing one of the largest media sources really not call out Wagner for what he's doing.
Yeah, it's remarkable. And, you know, frankly, the national media has very little interest in state politics. Some people do it well. I mean, the print media is much better on this. But, you know, frankly, cable news drives things. They don't really care that much about state politics until it's too late. So that's really, you know, again, just to kind of, you know, beat the dead horse here. But this is why it's going to be up to us. I mean, you know, it comes right down to the fact that it's going to be up to kind of independent journalists, right? It's independent media that want to kind of dig into this stuff, that do not want to see Pennsylvania become the next model for, you know, Trumplandia. So that's what we're going to have to do. So, so listen, we're coming right up on our breaks. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk a little bit about kind of some books for the struggle ahead, you know, kind of thinking about what are some of the tools that kind of organizers, progressives, those of us on the left can begin to turn to, kind of consult and think about that can help us in the struggle ahead. We'll talk a little bit more about kind of expanding kind of some of our media efforts. We'll get some more thoughts from Sean. You know, who knows where it'll take us. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be back right after this break.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1919. That was the day that Red Scare deportations began. 249 radicals, including anarcho-feminist Emma Goldman, were packed onto the USS Buford and deported to Russia. The year of 1919 had seen massive social convulsions. The Seattle General Strike had kicked off the year. It was followed by coal strikes and steel strikes, bombings and race riots. There were increasing fears of communist ideas and influences in the wake of the Bolshevik Revolution. These events touched off a draconian response by the U.S. federal government. Together with the young J. Edgar Hoover, Attorney General A. Mitchell Palmer conducted mass raids and arrests of more than 1,000 suspected working class radicals. The Department of Labor agreed that proclaimed membership in the Union of Russian Workers was a deportable offense. The ship set sail and docked in Finland, where trains transported the deportees into the Soviet Union. The vast majority of those deported had no criminal records and had never participated in any acts of terrorism. They were expelled for speaking out about their political opinions. According to Regan Schmidt, author of Red Scare, FBI and the Origins of Anti-Communism in the United States, employers' associations fueled the anti-radical climate. They were engaged in an intense open shop counterattack against post-war organizing campaigns and strike activity. The main goal was to discredit unions as subversive, Bolshevistic, and alien to basic American values. Donning the name The American Plan, closed shops were referred to as Sovietism in disguise, and propaganda campaigns were waged to ensure blacklists, internal union dissension, yellow dog contracts, and strike breaking.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out the Coop podcast. Today we are kind of, you know, at the verge of 2017. You know, this is probably going to be the last podcast that we do of 2016. I mean, who knows if some emergency comes up and we decide that we want to kind of float something, maybe we will. But most likely this is going to be our, you know, farewell to 2016. Let's hope for a heck of a lot better in 2017 as we move forward, although I have to admit right now that I am not hopeful. So, you know, Sean, when, you know, we've talked a little bit about some of these, you know, different books that we're kind of talking about, different consulting. And I thought, you know, one of the things that has been useful for me, at least, has been kind of just reading a bunch of stuff that can help me think through the kind of organizing that we've got to do moving forward. And, you know, I know that you've been doing some organizing out in Harrisburg, and I think that that's going to be some really, really important work, you know, not just you doing that in Harrisburg, but all around the state and around the country. And I've been thinking about books that are kind of, just have been helpful. And, you know, we're probably going to do a different segment on and Raging Chicken Radio, maybe kind of, you know, every other week, every couple of weeks, maybe once a month or something like this. Just it's highlighting a different book or so on. But I wanted to kind of tune people into a couple books that I think can be really important as we think beyond elections and toward organizing, the kind of work that we're going to need to do. The first book is this one from her name is Jane McAlevey. It's a book called No Shortcuts, Organizing for Power in the New Gilded Age. And McAlevey is a former SEIU organizer. She's done a ton of union organizing in the country, community organizing across the country for the past 20, 30 years, I think she says. And the book is absolutely critical because what it does is it actually points us in the direction of the kind of organizing that we need to do in order to build power. And she calls out a lot of folks on the left, right, progressives that have done organizing that have really have privileged a model of organizing, which is, this kind of flyover organizing that we're going to rely on the experts, we're going to rely on the professionals, and you're going to rely on the lawyers, and they're going to be the ones that are going to carry forth change. All that people need to do is, cast their votes when we say cast their votes, maybe write letters when we need to write letters, but there's actually not the organic power base. And this is something that I think that the right wing has got their head around fully. Go ahead.
Might I jump in there real quick?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I listened to this segment on Majority Report, Sam Cedar.
Yeah.
I think about a month and a half ago, 2 months, probably right before around the election, she was on there. And yeah, I definitely heard about the book at that time. But what you just said about the flyover organizing,
yeah,
is exactly what the people in the Clinton camp are gearing themselves up to do right now. Like I was just like listening to that and just like shaking my head, because now Priorities USA is positioning themselves to become the organizing wing arm of like a Democratic Party or some sort of like organizing part, where like, that guy from Brock, one of Clinton's henchmen and stuff like that. It's amazing to see how they're not learning from their, they're not learning from their mistakes.
No, they're not. You're absolutely right.
And what you're talking about, this, they're already going right into like that flyover organizing. Well, that have gotten us to this point because they think it's the only pill that works for them.
No, that's right. And I think what's been remarkable, frankly, I've been waiting, this is before we've got the results of the election. I just was personally looking forward to all the kind of tell-all books that are going to come out about the campaign and things like this, because it was such a crazy campaign. Just as kind of like reading, but now I'm actually even more interested in what's going on, because as reports continue to come back from organizers, people who organize on the Clinton campaign, like for example, I was listening to this one podcast the other day, and you had a caller from Pennsylvania who had worked on the Clinton campaign talking about how they had no resources, right? And this was a caller that was from kind of lower Bucks County, right? Not far from where I live, and which is a fairly well-off area, right? Kind of like especially south of me. And they had no resources. Right. They had no yard signs. Right. The local organizer had no funds from the Democratic Party. Right. She was running the campaign office through a fold out table in her front yard.
Yeah.
Right. And this is in a battleground state. The guy was saying we could not even get, right? We had people asking us for yard signs. We didn't have any yard signs. We couldn't, we had no materials. We had no support. We had no money. And when we told the national office that we needed this stuff, they just ignored us.
And this wasn't like, this was like Doylestown, right? Which is like a well-off to do, liberal paradise and like, part of like your more rural parts of Bucks County. No, this is like your southern Bucks, your tip of Bucks County, which is... Yardley, which is fairly well off to do, but Levittown, Bristol, Bensalem, all your former industry is all right there up along the I-95 corridor, like Croydon, these are hard, still some working class areas that probably all voted for Trump because the Clinton campaign.
Well, no, the areas still kind of like seemed most of those areas like seemed still to tilt towards Clinton, but the margins were barely there.
Yeah, right? the margins were where they were supposed to be.
Exactly. And what was remarkable about that, right? What was remarkable about that, well, that one call, and I actually think it was on the Majority Report that I'm trying to think about what show was I listening to. What was remarkable about that call was that this was an area in Pennsylvania that the Clinton campaign had frequently talked about as being must win for that campaign. Right. So this would be an area that they thought that they could win. And how did they think that? And what was remarkable, what this guy was saying is like the campaign was relying upon modeling, right? Data modeling, not on the ground data, right? From talking to actual voters, but basically projecting using past maps, right? Past elections to the Obama, through the Obama elections and projecting what they thought was going to happen. They didn't have the real data. And then they allocated their money towards areas what they thought they were going to need it, but it was not based upon actual data. And this, you know, this book by Jane McAlevey, right, is this kind of, it should be that thing that shakes us, right, and says, brings us back, say, this is the kind of work that we're actually going to have to get back to. And, you know, see a version of this taking place in the national, you know, kind of battle, if you will, right, for the who's going to be the next leader of the DNC, you know, Keith Ellison, or, you know, take your pick of the other, you know, people that are coming out of the former Clinton campaigns. So are we actually going to have the kind of organizing, the grassroots organizing, the building power from the ground up? Or are we going to kind of continue to, or are they going to continue, I should say, stick their heads in the sand and do this kind of like data from, you know, 3,000 feet?
And one of the things, like, this is some of the things that the state party is doing, you know, in Pennsylvania. I was having a conversation with a friend last night about, like, you know, who's moved out to Harrisburg, only been out here for a couple weeks. I gave him, like, the rundown of being out here for, like, a couple years. You know, this place changes. This is the – Harrisburg's, like, one of these, like, type of places that changes a human being, you know, like, after you get to seeing all the crap that goes on out here.
Right.
A couple years ago, we were following the PA 13 primary, right? Dalen Leach was running against Brendan Boyle. Also, yep. Marjorie Margolis was running. And one of the rumors why Marjorie Margolis was running, who is the mother, who's in-laws to the Clinton family, is because Marcel Groen wanted to become a ambassador to his homeland of Holland, you know, when Clinton became president. And Marcel Groen is now the person running the Pennsylvania Democratic Party. And he's also the person he's part of. He's a Clintonite, right? You know, we have Clintonites running our Democratic Party. And he's part of these corporate, part of the corporate wing of the Democratic Party. So, and I was just giving him some like nuances like that. And he was just like, the person just like, mind was just blown. I'm just like, no, we're not. He's like, and one of the things like we were talking about is how our state party officials, like those in the House and Senate, only spend money on the incumbents to get reelected than actually spending money in competitive districts to, oh, I don't know, stop losing a fucking election for every 3 years. Or two years, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that one of the things that I think is going to be is important to remember in this is, you know, I'm also very hesitant to spend too much time just kind of like bashing the Clinton campaign or bashing the kind of, you know, the corporate Democrats, although they deserve it. Right. Don't get me wrong.
But they should.
Here's my point. It's like, because that basically gives all the power to those people at the top. It just actually reproduces the exact same kind of argument. What you know, the other side to this is the fact that those organizations, right, that you know, who do the organizing, do the actual work, right, have been complicit with this. I mean, let's face it. I mean, labor unions, right, need to actually get behind the kind of grassroots organizing from the ground up and start, for example, defining the agenda instead of picking which one they think is going to win for the next time around. Like organizations, environmental organizations, right? It's not enough simply to try to influence the legislature, although that's important. But it's about organizing in these communities that are kind of most impacted. And we could go down the list, right, about labor organizing, environmental organizing, immigrants' rights organizing. It's, you know, a shift in kind of tactics has to take place. And I think this is, you know, where McAlevey's book is going to be so important is to take us back to, you know, the accumulated knowledge of what actually effective organizing looks like.
Yeah, no, it's yeah, I agree. It's just you know, like, and no, I agree. And one of the things that the Clinton campaign didn't do was listen to the organizers, because obviously, like, a story came out 2 days ago from a prominent Bernie activist in Philadelphia or Pennsylvania who was an organizer, you know, one of the battleground states, and they're all saying at the convention, "Hey, you guys cannot neglect us because, you know, these are the issues that our people want to be heard, and if you don't talk about these issues like trade, like the TPP, like minimum wage, you know, pretty much the shit that Bernie was running on, you're going to lose." And, you know, the lady described the look on the Clinton campaign faces as like they're just blown away, like their jaws dropped, like they heard this stuff for the first time. Like, these people, it seems like it was apparent that people working within the Clinton campaign were completely unaware of like the political education that needed to happen to win this. Like, and who do you blame for that? You blame the top, or like for the lack of political education that went on during this election? I don't know.
Well, I think it's like looking at it as a whole, as opposed to just try to put things in, instead of like pin it on this one thing as a thing that went wrong, right? But the kind of looking at this as a whole, and then thinking more about what needs to happen for the kind of future that we're looking at. That's why I think that's important. I think that, you know, another series of books that I got tagged that I'm kind of want to be talking about over the course of the next few months. Looking at some of these books and these articles that have been written about looking at the shift in the Democratic Party over the past 30 years, because, you know, a lot has been said, especially on the left, about what the right wing has done, right? How the right wing has actually built its institutions, has invested in this long-term strategy that began in the 1970s and it continues on today. Why they've won is because they've built these institutions. At the same time that was happening, what was happening at the Democratic Party was kind of taking us away from its connections with working communities and so on. But we'll get to that down the road. The other thing I want to highlight today is, like, you know, so that McAlevey book is kind of a cool one to kind of think about. And another one that I know, Sean and I, you and I have talked a little bit about this, and I've just kind of, you know, I'm not through the entire thing. It's a book by Mark Engler and Paul Engler. It's called This is an Uprising, How Nonviolent Revolt is Shaping the 21st Century. And I think this book is really important, as, you know, it's, I almost call this like soul work, right? And what I mean by that is, like, it's the kind of stuff that reminds you how history moves, right? It reminds you about why we fight in these ways. And yes, this is, you know, the idea that we need mass movements, the idea that fighting the fight over time is worth it and is victorious. And the fact that as much as that the professional politicians want to tell us that, you know, we need to behave in this way, we need to talk to these people, we need to go through appropriate channels, the only thing that has actually moved things historically, especially in the 20th century and into the 21st century, has been nonviolent mass political action. And Mark Engler and Paul Engler, they do an awesome job in this book, highlighting some of that history and walking through some of those examples, and then actually leading towards a program moving forward about nonviolent political action. So that's another one to highlight. And, you know, frankly, Mark lives down in Philadelphia, and he's someone that I hope to bring on the program down, you know, in 2017 to talk a little bit about this book and a little bit about how he's looking at, you know, approaching this Trump administration. So, I mean, you know, I know that you've been talking a little bit about this, Sean. You got any thoughts on that?
Again, it's another book that's on my list. I have not done any reading, as like hard reading lately, just been caught up working. And a lot of the reading I do is mostly like just reading articles, magazine articles online. I need to get back to reading some books, but, you know, this is like one of the ones, this is definitely on my short list after being friends with Mark Engler just on Facebook. So I see it in my timeline a lot. And I know a bunch of other activists in the Philadelphia area who, you know, has gone to grassroots meetings where he spoke about the book. And he's very in tune with the local activist community in Philadelphia. So it's actually like, it's pretty neat seeing someone from our home area doing something like this.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, it's definitely been a book that's been recommended to me by many people, not just you or James or like someone else. Like, I've had like at least like 5 or 10 people tell me about this book.
Yeah, exactly. I think some important buzz around the book. So, you know, if you're looking for your last minute shopping out there, folks, you know, for any kind of a Christmas holiday or Hanukkah presents or just, you know, New Year's cheer, but, you know, put these two on your list. We'll put links to these in the show notes. But one is No Shortcuts, Organizing for Power in the New Gilded Age by Jane McAlevey. And the second one is This is an Uprising, How Nonviolent Revolt is Shaping the 21st Century with Mark Engler and Paul Engler. So that'll wrap us up for this segment. We'll come back in a few minutes to kind of give us our end of the year cheer and look forward to 2017. But we'll be right back after this break with a little bit more of Out to Coop Podcast, Raging Chicken Radio. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be right back.
This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Over the past 5 years, we've brought unapologetic progressive activist media to Pennsylvania and beyond. We've helped hold those in power accountable and shine a light on some amazing activist work. We've broken national stories and established a reputation as an aggressive citizen media site. As newsrooms close and traditional journalists lose their jobs, hard-hitting investigative news suffers. If we care about our democracy, we have to find new sustainable models of journalism, and frankly, no one's going to do it for us. So take a minute to become a member of Raging Chicken Press. For as little as $5 a month, the price of a good beer or cup of coffee, you will be supporting homegrown progressive journalists and media activists. Go to RagingChickenPress.org and click on the Support and Membership tab to become a member. Leave a one-time donation or learn about other ways you can help. We don't have billionaire backers. Keeping progressive activist media going strong depends on you. Thank you for all your help and support, and keep up the fight.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out to Coop Podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. And man, I'll tell you, it has been a long, long 2016. I don't know a whole lot of people out there who have who are right now or are looking back at 2016 with fond memories of everything that's gone on. It just seems like a lot of stuff was tough this year. And I think that the election of 2016 only just underscored the difficulty of this year and you know, some of the struggles that we're facing ahead. But 2017 is right around the corner, and we're taking some time to rejuvenate, get our energy back, spend some time with friends and loved ones, and, think a little bit about where we go from here. So we're going to take a little break over the next couple of weeks, and we're going to come back in 2017. For the fight, that's really what we're doing. But in the meantime, we're just kind of looking forward this week coming up with friends and family. So, Sean, you got any plans for the holidays?
Yeah, I'll be able to come home next week for Christmas. We work Christmas Eve till 4 o'clock, and I'll be able to go down right straight down South Philly. I was supposed to come back Monday and work all day, but I was able to get two people to cover my lunch and afternoon shift. So, I'm able to be home Saturday through Thursday morning. I'm looking forward to come back, meet up with family, go do some more shopping the day after Christmas, and then also, meet up with you, a couple other people, and talk about the future. I'm actually pretty excited for next year, being out here in Harrisburg with the start of a new session legislatively. And then, we now have a team of writers to bring into a new year with us. So it's going to be fun producing more content and building out our readership.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I'm really excited about that part. And it's one of these kind of things where having a team to be working with and kind of moving forward also helps a little bit of the isolation, kind of keep your kind of spirits up and kind of your head in the fight, which is awesome. And I'm totally psyched to be good to see you. I haven't seen you in a while because I haven't been out to Harrisburg in a bit. Mm-hmm. I will have a bottle of the Raging Belgian for you, thanks to Matthew Biniuk from Biniuk Biotech Brews, who did a special bottling of a Belgian strong ale, and it's got the Raging Chicken labels right on it. So I'll be able to hand that to you, and we'll kind of as we move forward. But I'm just looking forward to having that chance to touch base and just think about where we go from here.
Yeah, it's going to be next year is definitely going to be interesting, especially with the state. The Senate now has a super majority hold. Republicans now have a super majority hold within the Senate. So it's going to be interesting to see how emboldened they are when they come back with the new session and see the kind of stuff that they want to push. It's definitely going to be interesting. We have our work cut out for us. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think it's going to come at us fast and furious when it comes to 2017. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So listen, everybody, I appreciate you tuning in and kind of checking us out here. Raging Chicken Radio is out the Coop podcast. And for all the support that you've shown us for the past 5 years, really, thank you to all the new members who have joined in the just past about month and a half. I have really helped, kind of get us to the point where we can actually begin paying our writers and then we can begin thinking about making this a sustainable enterprise. I've made some great connections with some people, which we're going to have some really great announcements coming in 2017 about some new partnerships. And I look forward to that. So thanks to those folks that have kind of reached out. A special shout out to Seth Goldstein, who's come on as our tech person. And man, I just, you know, I'm so thankful for the work that he's really devoted to helping us get our site secured, functioning a little bit more streamlined, helping me rethink the vision about how we bring content to you. So with that, wish everybody out there happy holidays, an awesome, awesome new year, and we will see you in 2017. All right. So, and Sean, I'll see you next week.
See you next week. Let's have some fun.
All right, let's do it. We're out of here, folks. Raging Chicken Radio, out the Coop podcast. See ya.